Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access TNA Impact Wrestling Audio Review. That's a really long title, isn't it? We'll think of something catchier someday. But I'd like to talk to you before we get into the August 18th episode of TNA Impact Wrestling. That just doesn't flow off the tongue that well, you know? But before we get into that episode, I want to talk to you right now about the ProWrestling.net Summer Sale. Right now, you can get our interviews with Tough Enough contestants Jeremiah Riggs and Michelle Dighton that are only available to .NET members, plus the two-hour interview that Jason Powell just conducted with Shane Hurricane Helms. In this interview, it's a pretty big one. Shane Helms goes over his career, his injuries, his motorcycle accident, and his new iPhone app, and it's a really enjoyable listen. And if you're one of those people, because I know there's a lot of them who don't like Shane Helms that much, listen to this interview. A lot of our members are saying, you know what, I wasn't a big fan, I listened to the interview, and man, I like the guy. He seemed pretty cool. So it's really a landmark interview for Shane Helms and definitely worth listening to. You will also get Chris Shore's recent interview with the playwright of the elaborate entrance of Chad Deity, Christopher Diaz, and in that he talks about his wrestling fandom, what inspired him to write a play about wrestling, and a very nice discussion of racism in professional wrestling and how it's all, you know, how he believes it affects everyone, really, and how it shows the good and bad of our culture. On top of that, there is member first run news that you will get access to. Jason, very well connected, will normally break news on the member's site 2, 3, 4, sometimes a full week before he actually breaks it on the not on the ad-based version, and it's news that you're going to get here first. Nowhere else is going to have it. Plus, you're going to get the .NET Weekly show, which is Jason Powell and Chris Shore discussing the news of the week. And once again, many times in .NET Weekly, just in passing, you're going to get news that you will not get anywhere else. It's not going to be published anywhere else. Only in the ProWrestling.net members' audio are you going to get it. On top of that, there's a .NET Countdown show, which is myself and Jake Barnett chatting about the best and worst in wrestling that week, and we always have a lot of fun doing that. It really allows us to take a positive spin and talk about what we like about pro wrestling on a weekly basis, and it's just a good audio in that way. Then you're going to get Q&A audio. I mean, I'm just listing it right now, and the .NET membership's awesome. It is packed like you would not believe. Then you're going to get Q&A audio from Chris Shore and Jason Powell on a weekly basis. And really just the access to the .NET members forum, all of it, and for only $5 for your first month. It's a crazy good discount. This is the deal that Jason offered when he opened the site 2 years ago. Or 3 years ago. Three and a half? Something like that. But this is the deal that Jason offered when he first opened the site. It's not going to last forever, guys. So check it out. And if you want that $5 a month option locked in all year, you can lock in the annual rate, $5 a month. Definitely worth it. Definitely a great time to be a .NET member. And if you want to check that out, just head on over to ProWrestling.net and check out on the ad-based version of our site. On the right side, you're going to see a big box that says .NET Summer Sale, and check that out. But enough about the sale, at least for this moment, because I'm going to be talking about it more. Sorry. But let's get into Impact. Last night, I mean, the big story, I guess, coming out of the show is the TNA Tag Team title change. But, I mean, the way they did it was really bad. The match leading up to it was great. But the actual change with, you know, four run-ins and the title belt being used, and then, of course, the after-effects of realizing that Mexican America are the new tag team champions. I didn't enjoy this segment. I thought that the Jeff Jarrett stuff was a little strange, and I see where they're going with it, but I don't like it. And then the other big story is, of course, Ric Flair's return. And let's just dive into that right now at the top of the show. This is, of course, the August 18th version. It was taped last Tuesday in the TNA Impact Wrestling Zone. It was the third of four straight days of pay-per-view and TV that they did. So I think there was a little bit of fatigue starting to show. And the show opened with a video about Kurt Angle's heel turn and how he blames Dixie Carter for his marriage falling apart or something like that. And I said this to the members last week, and I'll say it again this week. TNA's got a problem when the central story that they're telling is always about Kurt Angle's failed marriage to Karen Angle. This marriage apparently defined the company.
And now, as it's falling apart, that story defines the company. I don't like it. I think there's better ways to do things than dragging out this already divorced couple and this rivalry with Jeff Jarrett and all of that. There are better ways to get this done, and TNA is not doing them. There are better stories to tell that TNA has access to and can tell, but this is not a compelling one, and it's really sad. So we got that, and then Sting's music hit to start the show, and he made his entrance, and Sting's entrance was him falling all over the place, going, and then when he got a mic, he said, that's what it was last week. And then he said, but he felt privileged because he saw the fire in the eyes. He saw the eye of the tiger. He saw one of the greatest of all time, Hulk Hogan. And it was an honor to get beat up by him once again. And I, just as a pause here, Pruitt's pause, if you will. Sorry, that was ridiculous. I get what they're going with, but I don't like how heels and baby faces and everyone in the company alike are going, Hulk Hogan has that fire. We want to see Hulk. Because it doesn't ring true. Hulk Hogan does not have that fire. Hulk Hogan has that need to make money. And I think everyone watching kind of knows that. It also doesn't ring true because there is no fire in Hulk Hogan's eyes. He's out there, a shell of the wrestler he was, swinging a chair at guys and hoping that he never has to take a back bump. It's not good. But then he said he wanted to see everyone wanted to see Hogan back in the ring. And he said he wants to see Hogan back in the ring tonight. Then Ric Flair's, kind of amped up. Also, Sprock Zathura music hit. That was bad. That was a really bad pronunciation. I apologize, world. He said that he just heard Sting call Hogan the greatest wrestler of all time. And Ric Flair, I mean, he's still got the hair slicked back, but it's thinning. His face just looks older and older. And, I mean, you think back to WrestleMania 24. He didn't look this bad then. It could just be one of those things where he didn't age for so long and he looked like he was, timeless for so long that now that he's finally starting to age, it's just happening faster and faster. But yeah, that's not a positive thing for him. But he said he just heard Sting call Hogan the greatest wrestler of all time. And he said, people are always talking about how they want to see Sting and Ric Flair lock it up again. How people always come up to Ric Flair and say, one more match with Sting, and he must have wrestled Sting 1,500 times, and that Sting only beat him once, is what he said. And then he said he's tired of hearing Sting's name, so he wants to wrestle him. And he said, if Sting loses, Sting has to retire. And Flair, this was funny to me, said, and not a Foley retirement. Hey, Rick, if Foley happens to be the pot, I think you would be the kettle. Or vice versa. Whichever one is a little less slim, if you will. But I don't... Ric Flair calling someone's retirement fake, it's kind of bothersome because Ric Flair had the greatest retirement of all time. Had this huge deal made about him, leaving the ring May of 2008. It was epic. And then he came back to the ring for TNA and has not really had a good match and really has just not been all that consequential to their product, which is sad. But then Flair said if he loses, he will serve up Sting Hogan on a silver platter. So it looks like that match is going to happen, probably at No Surrender. And I'd like everyone to remember back to the last Nitro over 10 years ago, April 2001, and Ric Flair and Sting didn't put on a good match then. It was nostalgic. It was a little bit sad, actually, watching Nitro go down that way, but it wasn't good. And I'd like to remind everyone that it is 2011, and as Chris Shore said in his rather awesome live coverage of the show last night, by the way, Chris had to cover Impact, which he really does not enjoy doing. He said that the total age of that matchup is 114. 114. That's how, when you combine the ages of Sting and Ric Flair, that is how old they are. There are tag team matches where the combined ages aren't that high, guys. That is ridiculous. And then we went to commercial, and when we came back, Flair walked into Hogan's office, and Hogan threw a chair at a wall. That was crazy, right? And, you know, said, "What are you doing, Flair? What are you doing?" And Rick said, "I haven't seen you in so long. It's so good to see you." And kind of acted like, you know, if you go to a party and you've got a buddy there that you haven't seen for like 2 months, and they're super drunk, and they're like, "Hey, man, what's up? Oh, my God, I miss you." That's kind of what Ric Flair was doing to Hogan in this. And Hogan was like the sober, angry guy who came in to kick some ass, and Flair was the super drunk frenzies who was just looking for a hug. And really, Flair, in this segment, it seemed like his primary motivation was to get that hug from Hulk Hogan. Kind of like JD in Scrubs. But basically, Hogan was flipping out, and Flair said, "Come on, man, I'm 1,501 against Sting. I've got this. There's no way Sting can beat him." Then they kind of talked crazy, and Flair said, "Come on, man, you know I love you. You know I love you, man," and went to hug him. And then Flair said he would rally the troops, and Hogan would be fine. It was weird. Like, that segment was freaking weird. I also want to point out that up to this point in the show, and even into the next match, the stars that have been highlighted, Kurt Angle, Jeff Jarrett, Sting, Ric Flair, Hogan, Scott Steiner, D-Bomb, and as you're going down the list, the next star that gets highlighted is Samoa Joe. So it takes 8 guys in to get to Samoa Joe, and it takes 25 minutes in to actually even talk about a wrestler who never worked for the WWE or WCW. This is an issue. This is a serious issue with this company. And just when you look at it that way, if I'm tuning in to watch, oh, Ric Flair's there. God, he looks bad. Why? Did Sting forget how to do his face paint? What the hell's going on? Oh, Hulk Hogan. Hulk looks pretty good. Oh, look at him throw that chair. But you're not going, man, TNA has some great in-ring action. Man, TNA has some awesome young talent. It's just not happening. And it's an issue with this company. It's been an issue since day one that they like bringing in cast-offs more than they like bringing in, you know, their own stars or making their own stars. But it's getting to be bad. And this show showed why it's so bad. And, yeah. So then we got a video about Bully Ray beating D-Von at a house show twice. And then we got Matt Morgan on the announce team while Scott Steiner was in the ring waiting for D-Von. And then Scott Steiner defeated D-Von in 55 seconds. Scott Steiner won with his feet on the ropes, just like Bully Ray did over the weekend. It was kind of weird that you showed us the finish, then showed us that exact same finish again, TNA. But then Samoa Joe came out and attacked D-Von, hit a knee breaker, then locked in a leg lock on D-Von. And D-Von's children, who were at ringside, because, man, D-Von, you just can't stop bringing your kids. Leave them at home, dude. Your kids have never done anything good for you at ringside. There has never been a situation where having your children there has not been distracting. Just a quick thought. I think that's when you leave them at home. Yeah, just kind of weird. But so D-Von's kids got into the ring, and Joe was standing face-to-face with them, looking like he was about to beat him down. And the Pope, who seemed a little late for this cue, should have happened earlier, the Pope ran in and stood between D-Von's kids and Samoa Joe, and the world is going to get to see the restarting of that epic Pope and Samoa Joe rivalry. I mean, it dominated the first half of the year about Pope being a crooked street preacher and Samoa Joe stalking people with a cameraman, and now we're going to get it again! That wasn't actual excitement, guys. If this is where they go, that's horrible. I mean, honestly, at this point, Joe's character is so damaged, if TNA sent him home, they wouldn't be losing anything. If TNA just said, "You know what, dude? We can't use you. We're going to wait out your contract. Whatevs." They wouldn't be losing anything. And if you would have said that 2 years ago, I would have called you crazy. Because Joe was hot. Joe is still one of the hottest properties in wrestling. He's someone who fans will get behind if they're given the opportunity. But you have to give them the opportunity, TNA, and you're not doing that. So, and then Samoa Joe cut a crazed promo in the back, and this wasn't a bad opportunity, actually, saying that if he couldn't win the series, he would destroy it. And honestly, I really like the idea of Samoa Joe attempting to injure everyone in the series so he, with his -10, gets into the final four because everyone had to drop out. But that's something you start last week or on the pay-per-view or even the week before the pay-per-view. That's not something that you start when there's like 2 weeks left before you're going to get your final four figured out. So he said there was he said he could do whatever he wanted because nobody had the balls to fire him, and that there was a storm in pro wrestling and they added the thunder. I really like the phrase added or brought the thunder or bring in the thunder. So I'm a fan. You know, it was a good promo from Joe, and seeing a crazy Joe will be good, but TNA hasn't ever shown a willingness to push Joe consistently. Aside from his initial push in the company, they have never shown that they have the ability to consistently go with Joe 100%, and I don't think they will here. Then we got our second match of the night as the crowd magically changed from one to another. In case you're wondering, they ended up actually taped the X Division Gauntlet match, and Eric Bischoff wasn't happy with it. So on the next night during the tapings, they retaped the X Division Gauntlet match and edited it back in to this show. So that's what happened, and that's why, you know, those front row fans suddenly changed clothes. But in our second match of the night, Austin Aries defeated Alex Shelley, Tony Nese, Kid Cash, Robbie E., with Cookie, Zema Ion, Jesse Sorensen, and Mark Haskins in a gauntlet match for a shot at the X Division Championship in 12-19. This also apparently was to set up the rankings for the X Division, which just kind of seems unfair to do the rankings this way in a gauntlet. And the weird thing, I don't know, I find it hard to trust TNA anytime they say that they're going to have rankings for a championship, because we all remember those disastrous top 10 rankings that they did when they went to Monday nights when Hogan and Bischoff first took over. And it looks like it's going to be more of that. But going down the list, I mean, Alex Shelley was pinned first in this match, and I, you know, that's kind of a mistake. But then the rest of them, the bad thing about this match is that 7 of the guys had to take a pinfall. 7 of the guys, you know, had to be eliminated. That's just the way it works, and it's not an over-the-top rope. It's a definitive pinfall. So 7 guys aren't getting over. You know, I mean, and you're introducing, you know, looking at this list, Mark Haskins, Jesse Sorensen, Zema Ion, and Tony Nese, at the very least, and possibly even Kid Cash. So 4 to 5 guys that, you know, your average Impact viewer has seen in 1 to 2 matches in the entire time they've been watching, and they don't really remember them. I mean, those X Division guys that came in for the Destination X, you know, contract series, yeah, they might go, oh yeah, he was in that, right? Yeah, right? But they're never going to go, okay, I remember him, and he did this move, and this is his personality. And you got none of that in this match. I mean, in a way, and, you know, they used this comment on Raw this Monday night, CM Punk mentioned it, in a way, TNA tonight presented them like vanilla midgets. There were 4 guys in this match that most fans had only seen once or twice. And those 4 guys did not get a chance to stand out, did not really get a chance to get over. The action was great, but in the end, only 1 guy walked out the winner. And it was the right guy. It was Austin Aries winning the match. But again, it's, you're beating, you're showing guys getting beat in 1, 2, 3 minute segments. Well, why should I, you know, why should Alex Shelley got beat by Mark Haskins in like 2 minutes? 2 minutes, that's all it took. Why should I want to watch that? And also, as a side note, Mark Haskins, with his look right now and his walk, I honestly thought that it was a trick, and it was just Brian Kendrick with a little bit of stubble and a big furry coat, because he looks just as homeless and ridiculous. Mark Haskins showed at the pay-per-view that he didn't have it, and he showed it again tonight. I feel bad for saying that, and he may have shown something in the UK tour that they did, but I'm just not impressed with him. I think there are better X Division-style guys that they can sign. As good as the action was, and the action in this match was solid, some great moves, some good stuff. I was happy. You know, it was a nice boost of athleticism on the show. However, the grand effect of the match was not what it should have been. I would have rather seen, you know, the beginning of an X Division series of some sort to determine a number one contender. And also, as another side note here, As they went into this match, Mike Tenay called it the rebirth of the X Division in a gauntlet match tonight. That's the rebirth of your X Division? Guys getting beat in 2 minutes? It's antithetical to really what they want to do if they want to get the division over. Just like presenting the division as a bunch of friends and not a competitive division. Yeah, just, you know, not... A lot of this was not up to the standard that I think it should be. And I don't have that high of standards. What I'm saying is present wrestling as wrestling. And just let us, you know, let us enjoy it. And they aren't really doing that. Then we saw Austin Aries, after the match, spoke with Chrissy Hemme. And he said he just took out 7 guys and ran the gauntlet. Which was funny, because Austin Aries did like 2 moves. He was the last guy in. Which, again, ultimately, this is an unfair way to determine a contender or rankings, because Aries, being the last guy in, was guaranteed to be number 2 in the rankings, at least, if not number 1. And he told Brian Kendrick he was putting the title on the greatest man in the world. Then he started to walk away. Kendrick walked out. Aries asked him what he was going to do, and Kendrick stuck his hand out to shake it. Aries then did a little fake handshake and spun away. And Kendrick attacked him, and they brawled until they were separated. Then, backstage, Ric Flair was talking to himself. Big money right there. And he took off his watch and said he can't believe he had to tape up tonight. His first night back, tape up for Sting. I don't need tape for Sting. And that was it. And then he walked off to find Sting. Also, as a side note, this show, if TNA still titled their shows, could have been called Ric Flair Walking Around Backstage Talking to Himself. I mean, I think that's one of the best titles they could ever come up with. Then we saw a video showing the attack on Bully Ray last week, and Mike Tenay said Bully, or on, by Bully Ray, on Ken Anderson last week, and then Tenay said that Bully Ray had caused Ken Anderson to rupture both of his eardrums. What'd he do, attack him with Q-tips? You gotta be careful with those things, man. I mean, you will break something with a freaking Q-tip. Anyways... Then they showed the hype for Bound for Glory. And the problem, I like the idea of these hype videos for Bound for Glory. And what they seem like is, you know those videos that WWE plays at the top of WrestleMania every year right before the big pyro display in the first match where it's, you know, these guys going, this is my moment, my time to shine. And then it usually ends with Undertaker saying, WrestleMania. Well, this one, it's a lot like those videos talking about Bound for Glory. The problem is that this is their full advertisement, and it's like a 2-minute video that goes over it, and it's like, why not, you know, use clips of this and use elements of this in your advertising, but save this for the pay-per-view or for the week right before, but don't get us tired of it every week, and they're showing it really consistently. And then ODB and Jackie were backstage. And they talked about Jackie ODB's match with Mickie James and how they couldn't cheat and how once they got those TNA contracts, it was on. Also, ODB said, bam. And then we came back from commercial, and the cameraman that hides behind things showed Tracy Brooks talking to Eric Bischoff. Gosh, I'm on a hot streak right now, aren't I? And he basically, Bischoff played the horny old man. And was like, come closer, Tracy. And, you know, Tracy leaned in, and Bischoff stared at her boobs, and it was all quite the funny sight gag, right? But the main thing of this was Tracy was trying to convince Bischoff to make her knock out Law again, because that angle worked so well the first time. I am excited to see it reprised in TNA. And then Bischoff mumbled that it might be fun, and, you know, Bischoff's playing a dirty old man. And then ODB and Jackie came out where... While a video showed their match against Hera and Miss Testmacher last week, Mickey entered, and Mike Tenay told us that Mickey gets her championship match against Winter on the September 1st Impact. So I guess this is their big Impact. Like, you know, they always build to one big one, and I guess it's this one, or at least they're... And they also mentioned that on that night, we're going to see the Bound for Glory series Final Four determined, which... I'm guessing it'll be some sort of battle royal for 20,000 points because Vince Russo will have forgotten who he wants to be in the Final Four till that night. But then ODB and Jackie had a solid match. or ODB and Mickey James. Wow, nice work, me. Had a solid match. It went 5 minutes and 47 seconds and ended with Mickey hitting her finisher DDT for the win. And, I mean, it's not exactly what you want to see. I don't really care to see ODB in the ring. I find her act to be pretty trashy. But, I mean, it was one of the better matches that I can remember Mickey having in TNA, because I feel like she's just had a ton of duds in TNA. And they were given, you know, 5 minutes, some solid time, and they told a good story. Again, the story of ODB and Jackie being good so they can get those TNA contracts was in play, and I think that's a fun story. Because you're asking characters to act out of what, you know, we're supposed to assume are their kind of natural personas and act differently. I think that's an enjoyable idea for me. Then we saw Winter and Angelina Love in the back with the title belt. And Winter was saying how sensual it felt to hold that title belt up. And Angelina was sitting there going, yep, I've been champion 5 times. I know what that's like. And then they said, Then Winter said, Mickie James could beat whoever she wants, but there's nothing hardcore about her. This is Winter's world, and in Winter's world, blood rules. Then it looked like they were drinking wine, but Winter, like, spit some blood out of her mouth. And Chris Shore, in his little Shore Slant commentary on this, said, are you kidding me? And that's basically how I felt. Are you kidding me? Really? Her gimmick now is that she drinks blood? I mean, yes, sure, it worked for Gangrel in 1998, and everyone loved that entrance, and it was pretty badass. But, really? Drinking blood? That's where we're going? It's a bad, 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 bad idea, TNA. Leave it for 1998, Vince Russo. It was a good idea then. You don't need to remake it with a knockout for some reason in TNA in 2011. Leave it 13 years in the past where it belongs. Then we had our fourth match of the night, which was AJ Styles defeating Rob Van Dam in a Bound for Glory series match by disqualification in 5:17. And they got off to a pretty decent start. It wasn't anywhere near the great match that RVD and AJ Styles had over a year ago on Monday night when they hot-shotted the title onto RVD on Impact. But it was decent. But in this match, Lynn 2 times pulled the ref to the floor because he thought that Rob Van Dam should have gotten the 3 count, and he didn't. And Lynn was upset and fighting for the justice for RVD, I guess, and pulled him out and yelled at him. And then the second time, the referee said, oh, hells to the Nizzo, and disqualified Rob Van Dam for Jerry Lynn's interference, which I thought was a little weird. I mean, it's not like he hit another competitor or anything. You kind of, you know, I mean, isn't the first step to ban Jerry Lynn from ringside? Don't we see Earl Hebner do that in knockouts matches like 78% of the time? I mean, referees practice that big, you're out of here sign, because they know that it always gets a pop. Why not get that pop here, logically? Of course, logic has no place in TNA. But, so this was more Jerry Lynn trying to act out of the goodness of his heart, cost Rob Van Dam a match in the Bound for Glory series. So, that's kind of what it, you know, that's the story they're telling. It makes Jerry Lynn look like the stupidest man alive. I mean, there is a compelling story to be told with Jerry Lynn, and a lot of people have said it, kind of like the Randy Couture of the X Division, the guy who is coming back for one more run. He's trained, he feels ready, and he wants to make another go at being X Division champion. And you build him up, and you let him do that. You let him beat young guys, and you let young guys go over him, and you let those setbacks really set in. You tell a compelling story. And there's a story to be told. Everyone loves that story. I mean, it's the same thing with Brett Favre having that bad season for the Jets and going to the Vikings. Screw the Vikings, by the way. Go Pack, go. But it's that same idea of that veteran coming back for that one season where they can make magic happen. That's what TNA can do with Jerry Lynn. And Jerry Lynn is the perfect guy to do that with. But instead they're doing this awkward, I'm an idiot and I cost Rob Van Dam matches thing. Yeah, then we went to commercial. When we came back, Lynn and RVD continued to argue backstage, and RVD asked him to stay away. And then Ric Flair was shown in a darkened locker room area. I don't even know what the hell this was. And he was all like, come on, Sting, I know you're there. And it was supposed to look like Sting was going around and knocking things down, but you could kind of see in the background, you know, people running and knocking things down. And then Sting finally showed himself, and then Gunner attacked him. Then Sting reversed the tables and beat the hell out of Gunner. Flair ran away and yelled that Gunner was fired. Sting slammed Gunner onto some debris and slapped him around. Said one day Gunner was going to be someone. So was this Gunner being kicked out of Immortal? Does Immortal still exist? I mean, really. Bully Ray, Gunner, Scott Steiner, and Abyss. Out of that group, I'll keep Bully Ray and Gunner. I'll keep them around, but Scott Steiner and Abyss can go, and I won't mind. Mr. Anderson could go, and I know he's not in the group, but and I won't mind. I mean, now it just seems like the coalition of guys who are there to beat people up for the old men. The old men being Hogan, Bischoff, and Flair, the, you know, three main stars of TNA, if you watch this show. So, that was bad. But then we got something, and I'm about to blow people's minds right now. We got something pleasantly surprising and very funny, and it was Eric Young walking around Hollywood. He looked at a pretty lady and went, have you ever been on TV? You're pretty. You must have been on TV. Come on, let's do this. One match, and patted his TV title. Then Eric said, you know, I'm in charge of TV. Charles might have thought he was in charge, but not anymore. Now it's EY in charge. I know. I don't like TNA making a joke out of the TV title like that. The very concept of it, I'm not a fan of. But I really... These vignettes have gotten increasingly funnier. I mean, calling D'Lo Brown CeeLo Green. Brilliant! But they're funny. They are actually funny. This is how you use Eric Young. You keep him under a minute or two every week. You give him his own little wacky adventures. I mean, I'd rather see him pushed as a serious wrestler, but we know that's not going to happen. So, wacky adventures of Eric Young, as long as it stays under a minute and the comedy quality stays where it is, I'll take it, you know? But, yeah, the Flair Sting stuff, that was bad. That was really bad. And again, Ric Flair, it looked like he was walking around talking to himself backstage. Then we saw Crimson kind of arriving to the arena, and then we came back from commercial, and Crimson limped to the ring while video recapped the Kurt Angle beatdown he got last week, and Crimson called out Angle. And this was kind of there was good and bad about this promo. The good, Crimson wasn't terrible. Yeah, he yelled too much. Yes, I mean, he seemed a little awkward, and I don't think that Crimson knows how to use promos effectively to fire up the fans. And for a babyface, that's essential. No matter what kind of babyface you are, something you say needs to fire up the fans, and Crimson did not do that tonight. What he did do really well, he showed intensity. He showed that he was intense. I don't know that he got the fans on his side, but he was intense doing whatever he was doing. And, the bad thing about this was a lot of the content. Kurt Angle's part of the promo was, I was brought in to, you know, for the young guys to build around me. I was brought in to put these guys over and to make these young guys. Okay, pause, hold up, wait a minute. What does it mean for Kurt Angle to make someone in the storyline world of wrestling? In the storyline world. I'm not talking about, yeah, Kurt Angle was brought in because he can have great matches and those matches can make younger guys. That is absolutely true. But what does it mean in the storyline world? You know, what does it mean if I'm the guy watching who wants to turn off my brain and pretend this is real for 2 hours? I was brought in to make these younger guys. That's language that needs to be left in the back. That really is. And, you know, there's reasons why. I mean, it doesn't... So every loss that Kurt Angle took, he lost on purpose to make these guys? But Kurt Angle's supposed to be a competitor and be the best in the world. Why would he... You know, it brings up logical flaws that really compromise the very nature of wrestling characters. The nature of wrestling characters are why you watch wrestling. A comment like that really defeats the purpose. But, you know, they basically settled, next week, we're going to fight. Crimson, of course, is limping, and I think this may be the way to give him his first loss and allow Kurt Angle to, quote-unquote, make him. And I think it could also end up being Kurt Angle and Crimson at No Surrender on pay-per-view. So, at the end of this, Crimson said he was real, he was damn real. I still don't like that catchphrase. It's not near as cool as it's true.
it's damn true. Or, it's true, it's true. Yeah, that was so much better. Then Mexican America was shown backstage cutting a promo saying, we don't care that this is our last shot at beer money. We don't care because tonight we win, you know, Mexican America and all the things that they say. The issue I have with this is that this is a promo that should have been earlier in the show. You need to, if these tag titles are your main event, you need to promote it like a main event. And you need to have Mexican America saying on camera earlier in the show, this is our last shot. We got to get it done. Have the commentators talk about it and go, well, if Mexican America are out of the tag team title picture, what do they do? It's all that kind of stuff that you put over your main event like a main event. And then we came back from commercial, time for our main event, and Jeff and Karen Jarrett were at the announce team, were at the announce table, and they trashed the Spanish announce team. And Karen even called them dirty Mexicans. Stay classy, TNA. Stay so, so classy. Mexican America made their entrance, and Jeff Jarrett endorsed them and, you know, said he was buddies with them. Then Beer Money came out next, and this match was Mexican America defeating Beer Money for the tag team championships in 6 minutes and 18 seconds. What happened to TNA's tag division, man? They used to boast a really good tag division with the Machine Guns and Beer Money at this at the head of it, and now you've got Mexican America, British Invasion, and Beer Money. And if it looks like Beer Money's breaking up, or, you know, just going singles to go their separate ways, you've got Mexican America and the British Invasion. You've got two tag teams that are based on where they are from. Not based on anything else. They're just based on countries. We are from this country, so we are a team. And I get that that happens. I mean, the Wild Samoans was a, you know, thing of that. The British Bulldogs was like that. But these aren't exactly quality teams like those. This is Hernandez and Anarquia. Two terrible, terrible performers. But basically, the finish of this match, super overbooked. Sarita and Rosita got involved. Then Karen got involved. Karen Jarrett. And then Jeff Jarrett ran down to pull Karen out and left his Mexican world title hanging out in the ring. And Hernandez used that to, you know, use Jeff's belt to hit Rude and get the pinfall. And when Hernandez used the belt, he didn't hit him with the plate. He hit him with the belt side. Which I know probably hurts just as bad, but it looks so much prettier when you hit him with the actual belt plate. So, then Mexican America, their flag dropped, and they had their post-match celebration, and Kurt Angle and Karen Jarrett celebrated with them. And that was the show. It's not a... I don't like putting Mexican America as the tag champs, just because they're not that good of a team. I think the British Invasion running this running the exact same angle with the British Invasion would have been a better choice, minus the Jeff Jarrett stuff. But if you're going to put the tag titles on Mexican America, at least you didn't do it clean and put your two big young single stars in Beer Money over. And yeah, I like getting the belts off of Beer Money. I really do. As much as I love them as a tag team, and I think there's a ton of money in Beer Money, the team, there's so much money in Robert Roode and James Storm as singles competitors. So I like that move booking-wise. I think it's smart, and I mean, I have a feeling that we're going to get Roode versus Storm as one of the final four matches for the Bound for Glory series. I hope we don't, but I just kind of feel like that's what we're leading to, is Roode versus Storm. And that's going to start a rivalry that's going to carry on through Bound for Glory and beyond. I hope we don't get that. I hope if they do have a match, it's kind of a friendly rivalry type thing, and they don't end up breaking up. But TNA, I mean, I'm surprised they've been together for this long. They cannot resist breaking up tag teams. But, I mean, where does TNA go now? And I really wonder, where's TNA going at No Surrender? We know the Bound for Glory series is ending. We know we've got Ric Flair versus Sting, but that's all we have. We're 2 weeks into the build for this pay-per-view, and all we have is those two things, and that's not good. I know, you know, you can call me a hypocrite because I didn't really mind the SummerSlam build, but the SummerSlam build was built around one must-see, unforgettable, you have to be there and witness this live match. And that's not what we're getting from the No Surrender build. What we're getting is, yeah, you know, it's going to happen, but watch Bound for Glory! And we're going to promote Bound for Glory, but oh yeah, No Surrender, things are going to go down, it's going to be awesome. Just not a strong, strong idea in TNA right now. That's going to wrap it up for the TNA Impact audio review. But, once again, guys,
you know, $5 for 1 month, and you can lock in that rate if you take the annual option right now. You should check that out, prowrestling.net. Our summer sale, we don't do sales often. I mean, this is maybe once, twice a year that we actually have a sale, and it's a big deal. So please check it out and, you know, enjoy it. Let us, you know, if you are a new .NET member and you're listening right now, let us know what you think of the content. Hit us up in the forum, email, all of that. Please let us know what you think of the content. Let us know how we can serve you guys better. So thank you so much for listening. For ProWrestling.net, this is Will Pruitt signing off.